Good morning and welcome to a special KABU public affairs feature, Focus on Palestine-Israel. I'm your host, William Seaman. We're very fortunate to have with us by telephone from his office at the University of San Francisco, Professor Stephen Zunis. Dr. Stephen Zunis is professor of politics and the author of scores of articles for scholarly and general readership on Middle Eastern politics, U.S. foreign policy, international terrorism, social movements, and human rights. He's principal editor of Nonviolent Social Movements, and the author of the highly acclaimed Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism, and the forthcoming Western Sahara, Nationalism and Conflict in Northwest Africa. Dr. Zunis, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Dr. Zunis, coming up June 5th, 6th, and 7th, just across the Columbia River from us, we will have the former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressing a conference in Vancouver, Washington. The conference is called Convergence Northwest. If our listeners want to find out more, they can check out the conference's website at convergencenw.org. Now, this looks like a gathering of some of the most extreme right-wing elements of both the Israeli and U.S. political landscape. And as you might guess, the conference organizers are saying this is about educating Americans, Oregonians, and Southwest Washington leaders about the threat of terrorism, and more specifically about the alliance between Israel and the United States in the battle against terrorism. First of all, is this something new, or have conferences like this been held in other parts of the country?
Well, this is the first I've heard about this particular kind of gathering that's focused on a regional level outside of the Washington Beltway. But this effort to try to link the Israeli right-wing agenda of colonizing and annexing large parts of Arab territory seized in the 1967 war with the struggle around international terrorism and the threat from al-Qaeda, groups like that, that this effort at convergence of bringing those elements together is certainly something that quite a number of right-wing Republican lawmakers and their supporters have attempted to do in the past with the active cooperation of right-wing elements within Israeli politics.
And I wonder, what do you think the intentions are of this conference? Of course, they say this is education because they think the American people simply don't understand the true nature and character of the threat of terrorism, and more specifically, again, the role of this alliance between the U.S. and Israel in battling terrorism. But what do you think the intentions of this conference actually are?
Well, it is definitely to try to influence lawmakers through the American public into supporting policies that most Americans, out of respect for international law and human rights and enlightened self-interest, would not otherwise support. They are trying basically to equate efforts by Palestinians to free themselves from foreign military occupation with the efforts by mega-terrorists like al-Qaeda and the like to attack the United States. And even though terrorism for any purpose, whether it is trying to free oneself from military occupation or some broader jihadist goal, is wrong, I mean, terrorism can never be justified, that mixing these two elements is a great distortion of the process, and it tends to support the very misguided policies of both Netanyahu when he was prime minister and President Bush today in believing that conquest and repression are the ways to deal with terrorism, and in fact it's just those kind of policies that help provoke terrorism.
Well, let's talk specifically about some of these speakers that they have lined up. I read in the Oregonian coverage of this conference that Netanyahu might not actually be there. He might participate perhaps by video link. But could you tell our listeners, remind our listeners of the history of Benjamin Netanyahu and also how he is essentially waiting in the wings with the Olmert government so very weak and the likelihood that there will be a change of leadership in Israel, that this is not some game of history. Netanyahu is a key player today, and what has his role been in the past?
It's been quite interesting. Netanyahu actually lived in the United States for the better part of a decade. He became a U.S. citizen before he came back to Israel to become active in right-wing politics. It's rumored that he had close associations with certain intelligence agencies here on the side of the Atlantic, and indeed has been very close to the big advocate of close U.S.-Israeli strategic cooperation. As prime minister, he basically tried to scuttle the Oslo Accords. He was very much opposed to the efforts by former Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin to make peace with the Palestinians and other Arab neighbors. He dramatically increased Israel's colonization efforts in the West Bank to make a viable, contiguous Palestinian state physically impossible. He tried to extend the areas of Israeli control beyond what was promised in the phased redeployment of his predecessors. And he even split with Ariel Sharon, the right-wing former general, considered by many to be a war criminal for actions he took as defense minister and as an army officer and in Lebanon and Jordan and in Gaza Strip in previous decades. He thought Sharon was actually too soft by agreeing to withdraw illegal Israeli settlements from Gaza Strip and from allowing the Palestinians some form of autonomy in parts of the West Bank. He essentially believes that Israel should be able to hold on to all this territory in violation of the United Nations Charter, which forbids any country from expanding its territory by military force, and contrary to UN Security Council Resolutions 242 and 338, long seen as the basis of Middle East peace, and which, in return for security guarantees from its neighbors, Israel will withdraw from the territory seized in the 1967 war.
I wonder if you could go into that history a little deeper in terms of the vision that people like Benjamin Netanyahu, and we'll get to some of the other speakers who are going to be taking part in this conference in Vancouver at the beginning of June, their views as well, but their vision of what has been referred to as a greater Israel.
Well, basically, supporters of this vision, which include prominent Republican politicians here in the United States, it basically negates the post-World War II notion that it's illegal to expand a nation's boundaries by military force, that this idea of right of conquest is something that most people see as having gone out with the 19th century, that simply because you have the ability to defeat neighboring armies and seize their territory doesn't mean that it should become part of your country. I mean, that's what the Gulf War was supposedly fought about in 1991 following Iraq's conquest of Kuwait. And after a long, many, many years of efforts by church groups and human rights groups, Indonesia finally withdrew from East Timor after illegally conquering and gobbling up that territory. You know, there are a couple other places in the world, most notably, I guess, Morocco's occupation of Western Sahara that still have not been resolved, but the main one is Israel's ongoing occupation of the Golan Heights in the south western Syria and the and large parts of the West Bank. While Israeli troops have largely withdrawn from the Gaza Strip, that's still under quasi-occupation because it's essentially under siege. The Israelis will not allow them to open their border crossings into Egypt. They are without very, very strict management from the Israeli side. They've not allowed them to reopen their seaport or their airport or anything like that. So in many ways, Gaza Strip remains occupied as well. But basically, the idea behind this is that Israel, either by right of conquest or by some more fundamentalist Jews, the idea of fulfilling some biblical promises, has this right to control vast Arab lands that were seized by military force. They've gotten an interesting alliance with certain right-wing Christian fundamentalists who believe that chapter 15 in Genesis should be the basis of any kind of settlement, that Senator Inhofe, senior senator from Oklahoma, said this was settled in the book of Genesis. This is about whether God's word is really should be honored. This is not a matter of international law. This is not a matter of negotiations or anything like that. And there are tens of millions of Americans who really believe this sincerely, who see God not as a God of justice, but some kind of cosmic real estate agent who gets to decide, you know, which people gets to have which lands. And so the Israeli right has made alliance with many elements within the Christian right to try to justify Israel's takeover of a large amount of Arab land in which people have lived in and farmed and for many, many centuries, and turn it into a part of greater Israel with the backing of the American taxpayer.
Now, this is the so-called Christian Zionism mm-hmm. that we hear more and more about in recent years. But I wonder, there seem to be two elements of this. You were citing passages from Genesis, and I wonder if maybe you'd make that more concrete to those of us, those of our listeners as well, who are not as familiar with the biblical citations mm-hmm. that you're referring to. But the other end of that timeline is the so-called end times, in which Israel is also purported to play a role. And I wonder if you could talk about, if you could bridge those two elements of mm-hmm. this Christian Zionist ideology.
Well, yeah, basically, there's this kind of millennialist idea that the ingathering of Jews into the Holy Land after years of exile would be one of the harbingers of the coming of the Messiah. Now, even Bible-believing Christians, many would argue that they're referring to the return from the Babylonian exile and Jesus Christ coming. This is not in reference to Jews coming back a third time and the second coming taking place. There's also this also the sense of the promises to Abraham and his descendants, which also, of course, include today's modern-day Arabs, who like the Jews, are descended, you know, from the early tribes of that territory. So even if one does take the Bible literally, one doesn't necessarily have to buy into this this notion of the dominant nation state of Israel being necessary for the fulfillment of biblical prophecy or for the second coming. But this particular branch does indeed see the modern Israel and Israel's control of that territory, and some would say even the rebuilding of the second temple on what is now the site of the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque is necessary for Christ's coming. But interesting thing about this theology, is that when Christ does come again, if the Jews don't immediately have not converted, they are doomed to eternal damnation. So it's kind of an anti-Semitic theology in many respects. They want to use the Jews for Act 1, but not for Act 2, that they essentially want to fight the Muslims to the last Jew. This is not one that really, frankly, cares about Israel's best interest in terms of its national security and the like, which would require a territorial compromise of the Palestinians, a withdrawal to the 67 borders, a recognizing a viable Palestinian state alongside Israel. And this is what would be best for Israel's security, because this is what most of the terrorism and isolation and threats against Israel really are all about. But these folks really aren't interested in Israel's long-term security interests because they want to see this apocalyptic occurrence, which even in their own vision would be very bad for the Jewish people. And even if you don't believe this in the second coming, this kind of policy is going to be very bad for the Jewish people because it keeps pushing Israel to continue its self-destructive policies of occupation and colonization and repression, which have created this Islamist resurgence and the real threats that Israel's facing today. I mean, I think it's important to note that Hamas, Islamic Jihad, all those groups didn't exist until after years of Israeli occupation and the failure of the peace process to make a settlement that would allow the Palestinians freedom and a viable state.
Well, I wonder if we could talk about what, you know, the significance of this Christian Zionist movement, the alliance between Christian fundamentalists here in the United States and essentially the most extreme right-wing elements of Israeli society and the Israeli political landscape. The Christian fundamentalist communities here in the United States do not reflect a significant part of the population here, and yet they appear to have influence beyond their numbers. And can you talk a little bit about that and maybe provide some insight into why this community is playing such a prominent role with respect to this issue?
Actually, Christian fundamentalists are a fairly significant proportion of the population, good 40, 50 million at least. Not all subscribe to this millennialist theology that I was referring to, but quite a number do. And they're particularly influential in terms of the Republican Party. They essentially control the Republican Party in quite a few states and have a lot of influence in the current administration. I've documented two or three occasions, in fact, where President Bush began to push Israel on a couple of policy areas that where he thought Israel was going a bit too far. And then, within a few days, back down and essentially started endorsing the particular policy. And if you look at what happened the days in between, the Christian right-wing network mobilized through their radio and television broadcast from the pulpits and got hundreds of thousands of emails and other communications to the White House, really pushing them to back off on pressuring Israel. To allow Israel to proceed with the offensive in the spring of 2002, with the war on Lebanon this past summer, with a refusal to consider more territorial compromise when there was talk of resuming the peace talks. I mean, these had an impact on the Bush administration. In fact, I think it's fair to say, at least under the Republicans, the Christian Zionists and their organizations, their networks, are even more powerful than the Jewish Zionists in AIPAC and the pro-Israel lobby.
Well, let's turn back to some of the people who are going to be speaking at this conference. I wonder if you could give us some insight into these players. I'm looking in particular at Dr. Aryeh Eldad, who is apparently a member of Avigdor Lieberman's party. And it'd be nice if perhaps you could talk a little bit about this Moledet party, which is a part of the National Union, and Avigdor Lieberman. This is a name that comes up time and again, but it's not clear to me that many people here in the United States know who these folks are.
Well, he's in the current Israeli cabinet. He's the vice premier. His position, his party's position, is essentially for ethnic cleansing, and basically to physically remove the Palestinian Arab population from both Israel, where Palestinians are a minority, albeit citizens of Israel, as well as the Palestinians in the occupied territories. And this is a very, very, very extremist, racist ideologue, and that the very fact that the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert would give him such a prominent position in his cabinet is rather distressing. I mean, it's quite remarkable that the position of both the Republican and Democratic parties is that if the Palestine Authority has but one member of Hamas in the cabinet, that we won't talk to them, we will block any kind of assistance to them or anything like that. But they allow somebody that had no problems with sending billions of dollars of aid to Israel, when they have someone who's even more extreme as their vice premier. And indeed, Lieberman has justified acts of terrorism by some extremist Jewish groups in the occupied territories that have killed Palestinian civilians. This guy is pretty hardcore by any measure, and the fact that he's considered a respected figure who's given a visa to come to the United States to talk to groups such as this. Whereas even the most indirect association with Hamas makes you persona non grata, I think is indicative of the double standards and indeed the racism that you see within U.S. policy priorities.
Just to clarify, I don't think Avigdor Lieberman is speaking here, but Dr. Aryeh Eldad, who is a member of the same party. And just as you say, this is a party that explicitly calls for the expulsion of the non-Jewish population, in particular the Palestinian Arab population, within Israel. These are Israeli citizens that they are calling to have transferred out of the state of Israel. That's not an exaggeration, is it?
No, not at all. This is very much a very extremist party, no question about it.
Now, would it be unfair to compare the character of their policies? I mean, if we look for a similar kind of political aggregation here, social aggregation here in the United States, I mean, one thinks of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, this is definitely a racist party. This is not, and they're not shy about it. It is about one's ethnic religious identity that you know, gives you rights or does not give you rights, gives you permission to live on particular land and not. This is no question. This is a very extremist party, comparable, again, to the white supremacist and others that we've seen in this country from time to time.
Well, now, with that in mind, I mean, something that's particularly disturbing, I think, for American Jews, especially, of course, progressive American Jews, is that we have members of the local Portland Jewish Federation, prominent members. These are folks who put themselves forward as representing the broader Jewish community, who are taking part in this conference, who are essentially taking part in a conference with these representatives from this racist political party in Israel. And I wonder, if I were to take part in a conference where a representative that was speaking on the same panel, for example, that maybe I was speaking, and that representative were to call for the expulsion of the Jews from Palestine, to throw the Jews into the sea, how I would be characterized in the local media, for example, taking part in a conference like that. And yet, it, just as I say, we have prominent leaders from the Jewish Federation here in Portland taking part in this conference. How should we think about that sort of incident?
It is rather disturbing. I mean, I would assume that virtually no one in the leadership of the Jewish community in Portland actually agrees with that kind of perspective. But at the same time, you know, the fact that they're willing to share a podium, to be at a conference that includes people like that, it is rather disturbing, and something that I think needs to be addressed. They need to be held accountable for, and to explain why they are willing to take part in such a gathering, and to give them an opportunity to separate themselves from that kind of ideology.
We are speaking with Professor Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7 FM in Portland, and in Corvallis at 100.7 FM, and in the Columbia Gorge at 91.9 FM. Professor Zunis, I know you're busy. You're heading out of the country later today. But are there other elements of the current situation in Israel-Palestine? Of course, we've been hearing of the escalation of violence in Gaza. Are there other elements of how things are evolving there that you think our listeners need to be aware of?
I think the underlying thing to remember is that the peace process has essentially been frozen since Ariel Sharon and George W. Bush came to power in early 2001. And that the lack of a peace process is what has led to the rise of Hamas and the violence and other problems that we've been seeing on the Palestinian side, that the majority of Palestinians, including the President Mahmoud Abbas, are willing to sign a peace agreement with Israel, which would give full security guarantees to Israel, break up the militias and terrorist groups and the like, and to have full normal relations, in return for Israel withdrawing from the territory seized in the 1967 war, with perhaps some minor and reciprocal border adjustments. And the U.S. and Israeli position has been to reject that, and to instead argue that Israel has a right to annex large swaths of territory in the West Bank in order to incorporate these illegal settlements into Israel, settlements which are a violation of both the Fourth Geneva Convention and a series of UN Security Council resolutions. You know, no country can move its civilian population onto occupied territory like that. And what it comes down to is that basically the Palestinians' negotiating position has actually been far more moderate, far more consistent with international law, far more consistent with the positions of America's democratic allies around the world, than has been the U.S. or Israeli position, and that peace is really not that difficult. The majority of Israelis appear to be open to such a two-state solution as I described as well. But the Bush administration, ironically, with the support of both Republicans and Democrats in Congress, have essentially gone to support Olmert annexationist agenda, and has undermined the moderate Palestinians and moderate Israelis who've been trying to work for some kind of a settlement. The Geneva Initiative, which was an effort by moderates of both sides to put up a draft agreement that was signed in December 2003, was essentially ignored by Congress and the administration. Instead, they put their full support behind the Sharon-Olmert convergence plan, where they basically unilaterally withdraw from certain populated Palestinian areas while annexing the land in such a way that the remaining Palestinian parts end up being a series of non-contiguous cantons, which are economically inviable, and basically make a Palestinian state, which is necessary for a peace settlement, impossible. So I think we really need to pressure members of Congress to insist that the Bush administration support something along the lines of the Geneva Initiative or other efforts by the moderates of both sides, instead of giving a carte blanche to the Israeli government and putting all the blame incorrectly on the Palestinian side for the current impasse.
And you've been listening to a KBOO Public Affairs special feature focused on Palestine-Israel. Our guest has been University of San Francisco Professor of Politics, Stephen Zunis. Stephen, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.